theirs and they feel comfortable about it, I think they'll develop a sense of pride, and I think few of them would sell their stock. And those that do, then the company should prepare to have the finances available to try to buy them out. And that's what my opinion is on the question of selling. Mm-hmm. I don't want to sell my stock, but I'm hoping that our company will be doing some things in the future that will keep me there.
Yeah.
Keep my stock.
I don't believe that we should have the right to sell our children's birthright, yet you believe that we're qualified to sell it.
Yeah, the act right now gives each person that choice, and that choice should be by the individual shareholder. But as I say, I think management should be trying to convince and educate the shareholder to keep the stock.
That's quite a profound philosophical question, and you two gentlemen are on opposite sides of that, and that's reasonable people, I suppose, can take either one side or the other of that question. But Charlie Johnson, the president of AFN, said at one of our roundtables that many shareholders had an expectation of benefit from AXA that is still unrealized. So something had to be done to give them a chance to get some money out of this. And that seems to be the reasoning behind resolution number four, the buyback. Number three, lose track of these things. Number three, that says, well, if you can't sell your shares after 1991 to Exxon or somebody out there, you can sell them to your own corporation between now and 1991. Now, you make the point that since there's really no market for them, and it's an offer made by the corporation, a unilateral offer, it might very well be one that doesn't represent the value of the shares.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another feature to that, Mr. Rood, that I'd like your comment on. You could wind up, if you sold them back, with, that is, if between now and 1991, shareholders had the option to accept an offer from their corporation for their shares. Suppose 50% of them said, okay, here's my shares, give me my $1,000 or whatever it is. Then you'd have maybe half the people in the region or the village holding shares and the other half without shares because they would have sold them back to the corporation. The corporation would still be in native hands, mm-hmm. And the land, which certainly in most regions is the vital concern, would still be in native hands, but half the people would be the owners of the land, the other half would be, so to speak, tenants or non-owners. Is there any way, have you thought of any way around that? There was a gentleman here yesterday who talked about giving people the right to sell their economic value of the shares, but they couldn't sell their right to participate, their right to vote. I hope I'm not making this too complicated, but clearly you've struggled with this for a long time. And any thoughts on that?
Not that I haven't wrote down in that address there. We're trying to come up with options at Siri, I know, and they came up with a new one the other day, but I think that should be saved for the president of the company to make an announcement on what that'll be in the future. And I don't have that much data on it right now. It's a new concept that just came before us.
I got a question for Mr. Rood. After we sell our stocks back to the corporation, will it stay in the corporation or what? Or do we
Well, that depends. If it's just the native company going to buy it back, the stock will stay there, and I believe it is converted to treasury stock, if I'm right, isn't it? And it will be kept held by the company, and unless the company is taken over by an outside source.
Hmm. Nobody.
In other words, it'd be their control.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think anybody can vote it.
Yeah, no. Nobody can vote the treasury stock.
No.
Good. That's all I want to know. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, any more questions for Mr. Rood? Yes, there are.
Excuse me.
I thought I was just going to testify here.
You better be there. My name's Lillian Lapp. I'm a large shareholder of Cook Inlet Region. And Mr. Rood, I have 160 acres native allotment, and I also have my will made out, and I'm married to a white person. And he gets the stock. Now, it's already made out. It's everything that I should do right is already gone through. Is there any way that the region can break that?
Well, if this one amendment passes, the way I understand it, you will not be able to will that stock to a non-native. It will have to be a native, or else it'll go back to the corporation if you have no heirs.
Well, I have heirs, but if I'm still here in 1991 and they decide that my husband couldn't have that stock, I'm going to sue Cook Inlet Region for discrimination. And I won't be alone. I'll get all the rest of my native people as married to whites to go that way, too.
Well,
they
I know
can't tell us what to do.
I agree. I don't support that amendment, neither. I know a lot of non-native women that have married native men, and that's what I used as an example.
Right.
After they spend a life together for maybe 40 or 50 years, and if that's the only value they have to give that survivor to support them for the next 10 or 20 years of their life, they should be able to pass that on to them.
I think I should, because it will be 39 years in June that we've been married. So, and as far as Evan's concerned with their changes to sell back to the corporation in 86, if they get that passed through in Congress, I'd never sell my stock to the corporation. They wouldn't have enough money to pay all of us if we decide to sell. So as far as Evan's concerned, we don't have a voice in what they say. The last meeting was the end of January, and they nominated a delegate and an alternate from the villagers, but we were all there and we didn't have a voice. You were not to speak. And I don't like to be put in that position.
Well, I got notice the other day in a board packet that says they're going to move to approve these resolutions the 26th, 27th, and 28th. And then after that, they're going to be moving to seek legislation. And I always was under the impression that these resolutions would go to the shareholders, and for 6 months or so, they would be educated by the corporations of what these resolutions meant and how they would impact on shareholders' rights and the value of our stock. And then after that, I thought I was under the impression that we would be able to vote on them. And then if a majority approved, then they would go forward and AFN would seek the legislation. But apparently I was thinking wrong, and else I'm hearing wrong. That seems to be the way it's going right
now. Well, I was in Dillingham when they had their retreat, and I went to the banquet and was able to speak with some of the heads of different organizations, and it sounded real good, like they were going to have a meeting with us for us to vote on it. But at the last AFN meeting, they said nobody can speak. Some of them really got out of order, but then you can't blame us either, because we're shareholders. If it wasn't for us, they wouldn't have corporation.
Mm-hmm. May I add something here?
Sure.
Thank you.
on your point, and
could we have your name, sir?
Yeah, I'm Leonard. Leonard, I'll get over here. This is for a comment. I'm Leonard Minka, a Athabascan from Chistochina. On that point, I was just wondering, inasmuch as Robert Rood wants a vote on these planks,
which to me would indicate a referendum, right, Bob?
Mm-hmm.
And then she is concerned about her will. And I've been speaking with some of the people around the state about a referendum drive, but I don't know of anyone that really has the, you know, in my circle of friends, let's put it, that has the resources to start a drive, a referendum in each region to go to AFN with in time. The feedback I'm getting at this point is that people are getting a little bit afraid of the fact that AFN might act and go to DC before they ever get off the ground.
That's what worries me, too.
And so this is the question at this point, the critical question on, you know, what is going to be done with our problem here in the immediate future. And so I should think that one of the things that we really have to concentrate on is a referendum in each region, and, you know, absolutely necessary. That's the one thing I came here today to say, and after all you had said, and that's the one thing you wanted to say, yeah. And a lot of people have said that. So I don't know. If you ought to be a delegate to say anything in the regional meetings, and you're not a delegate, this is the greatest bitch that I had during the Alaska Native land claims, was that I was not asked to vote on the Alaska Native land claims. And about the same time, when the oil companies were coming up here, you know, we had this Teapot Dome incident, and we had Naval Pet 4, and everybody knew about the oil. And then we had the president coming up here from Atlantic Richfield, and next thing we know, nobody can get 160 acres anymore. Nobody can file a native allotment. Nobody can get a homestead anymore, you know. And that's about the same time the oil firms came up here and getting really active on the North Slope. And then all of a sudden the regionals wind up with all this power, and a lot of us, the second wave of the the native leadership got wasted. We just did not have a place in the regional format. We didn't have a place in a lot of the native structure when we got back home after our college educations. And I would testify at this point on, you know, on behalf of our own people, that as a person and a native man in this community, I've been left out. And not just me, a lot of people that have got a good education, a good heart, and whatever it takes to make in this world. But the thing is that the karma of the Alaska Native land claims is something which is so repulsive to the basic framework of Native Alaskans because of the corporate myth, this idea that all of our wealth should be placed behind a corporate myth in the hands of a few, an aristocracy, a Native aristocracy. This was never done in our culture. And so I think probably we ought to bring this thing back down to earth if we can and get some referendums going up here in each region and organize it.
I don't know much about referendums, but not too long ago, the regional corporation invited us villages in to select how we were going to be represented at AFN. Before this meeting, nobody knew what was going on. Everybody came to this meeting. And they said the participants of the Cook Inlet Region Corporation villages and traditional council villages all came to the meeting and says, we don't have a resolution from our people to select who is going to talk for us at AFN. And besides that, there was only 5 representatives from village from each region. In our region, there's only about 7 villages, so it's a little more closer. But you go over to Bristol Bay, and how many villages are there? There's no way that the system that they have set up at AFN can address the drastic problem of it. Also, a lot of people forget the native groups that are out there that couldn't qualify as villages. And, you know, a lot of people forget about them. What about them? A lot of these questions, if you are going to go along with this corporate structure, have to be addressed.
Well, thanks, Mr. Harrison.
Are you through with me now?
I guess so.
No.
More.
I just have a couple of questions.
Sure.
I received a letter from you, two of them, as a matter of fact.
Should have been three.
Yeah, well, I didn't feel really bad when I got them, because I remember when you were, when this corporation thing just started. And I'd like to know, do you support this thing?
Pardon?
Do you support the corporation system as a means of survival for Alaska Natives?
The corporation system was...
Just answer me, yes or no.
At this point, yeah.
You do?
I think it can still work.
I'd like to know why.
Okay, there's a...
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've been living in living with it now for what, 14 years? And we've evolved to a situation...
When you say we, who are you talking about?
Well, let Mr. Rood carry on.
The corporate structure has evolved, like within Cook Inlet region, to what it is now. I think it can be improved, though. And if the things are done, as I mentioned in one of my letters to you, I think the structure would work well.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be the vehicle we could use to go into the future. To go into another system right now is going to be a monumental task. And you have all these rights out there and all these laws. And to comply with them, it would be a very difficult task.
You mean dissenting shareholders' rights, really?
Yeah, well, yeah. Say if we went and moved all the land to another corporation and we created tribes, as an example. To do that, you're going to still have to go back and dissolve the corporate structure, and them assets have to be dealt with. The assets you could transfer over, but to do that, you're again going to have to take a majority vote of the shareholders, and again, if the people don't agree, then you're going to have to buy those people out at fair value. And to get fair value, you're going to have to get appraisals on all the assets, and you're talking multi-millions of dollars to do that.
Mm-hmm. I spoke this morning, and I'm not totally cognizant of the corporate structure, nor mm-hmm. am I interested. And you answered an important question for me, because you asked for support in your
mm-hmm.
letter, and I don't support it. And I want you to know that as a Cook Inlet Region Incorporated shareholder, and I'm not going to name call Mr. Berger. I'm just, again, speaking my voice as a shareholder. I don't
That's
agree
done.
With it. I didn't agree with it when it started. I don't agree with it now. In your letter, I didn't
mm-hmm.
finish your letter.
Mm-hmm.
I read the first part of it, and I remember you asking for support. The thing that bothers me the most is that you're talking multi-millions of dollars, and, you know, to me that does not compute. I've never seen a $500 bill. And maybe at some point after I'm, you know, too old to appreciate it, maybe I'll see that, but I highly
mm-hmm.
doubt it. As long as this setup is set up the way it's set up.
And may I ask you something?
You certainly may.
What structure would you prefer?
I don't prefer a corporate structure because that to me is a continuation of something that's not alien. See, the thing is the land, right?
Mm-hmm.
The land, the culture, the people. And I like to know where all this land is that I have, and I like to know where all the money is that I have. Not
mm-hmm.
that I really care about the money, no, because we're talking about future generations of children,
mm-hmm.
people, native people. And not just native people either. We're talking also non-natives.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're talking, when you talk to me about a corporate structure, you're talking Greek to me. And I'm assuming, aside from the educated natives, that they don't know what you're talking about either. I get the annual report. I'm making a mistake. I never read the annual report. I'm going to start reading it from now on.
Good.
And I will find out about it, only as long as it's set up the way it is. But I want you to know I don't support it, not now or not ever. If it were up to me, it would the dissolving of the corporations would be fine. However, progress is something that you can't stop. And we are well into the 20th century. I'm not saying let's go back to the way it was. We can't. It will never be. But what I'm saying is I see right now a lot of unequal sharing, a lot of stealing. And you're talking about the state of Alaska and the Aboriginal peoples, quote, quote, as they call us. And for that, I'll say it again, I'm angry. And
you know,
I'm sorry to say that up until the Berger Commission was established or whatever, I didn't feel I had a voice. To me, all the subsidiary, native, whatever those, AFN and all that, that to me is not serious. To me, that's not a voice of the people.
I'd like
and
to
I
make
don't
a
believe the corporations are either. Thank you.
Your opinion that you state, why don't you introduce it as a resolution that Syrian and start promoting it?
To
whom? The people.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm doing right now. I'm promoting my viewpoints. It's costing me money out of my own pocket, but if you get people behind you and seek donations from them, that would be another option that could be presented before the people and voted upon before the people, too.
I tell you what I'm going to do. It's definitely not going to be, I'm not going to use the Native Corporations, Cook Inlet Region Incorporated. What I will do is I will get together with my family, whom some of them are here, and we'll talk this over, and we definitely are going to do something, but it is not through the corporate structure, because I don't feel that the corporate structure is set up to facilitate whatever it's set up to facilitate for the Native people. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Is that it?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr.
Anybody
Rude.
Else?
Oh, okay.
Well, I didn't know I was going to be on the hot seat here today.
I think that one of the things that everybody ought to understand at this point or any point in time, and that is the fact that a government can do away with a corporation in an instant by an act. I represent a government that is the central government of all of the Native people just by the geographic location. We have already terminated this ANCSA program in our government, and we extended that to all of the Native people. Let's just look at this thing from a human point of view. They want us to take the children that are alive at one point and put them here and then kill these children over here. Our government says no. And because we are as awesome in our position as a government, there's another government that has concurred, and that government is the United States. We have a lot of sedition and unwanted criminals in control at this time. But we, the people, have spoken no. And if these others wish to play this game to the end, then let them know the price of sedition is death. William James Walsh.
Mr. Walsh, I'd like to know in what method you're going to seek a means to your end there. Is it going to be by legal action, or is it going to be by vote of the people, or is it going to be by new legislation, or what?
Our people voted on it. The United States President signed the Genocide Convention.
Okay. Well, look, Mr. Rood, we've kept you here for a while, and I thank you.
Thank you.
And I'd like to take a 5-minute break for a cup of coffee. We have coffee here, and you're all welcome to have some, and we'll start again in about 5 minutes. And I want to thank those who spoke this afternoon. Oh, we do, eh?
Yes, and it's scheduled to go all day. I know.
Oh,
that's enough time for us.
Well, maybe we'll start again, folks, and carry on for a while.
Commissioner, ladies and gentlemen, my name's Gil Stokes. I'm a shareholder of Sea Alaska. My original home is Wrangell. I always have to say that. Okay. I'd like to just go back a bit briefly to what Mr. Rudd had said about the 1971 children born after 1971. I really have thought about this very, very hard. I myself don't have any children, but I have plenty of cousins and nieces and nephews and great nephews and so on. And many of my family tree are married to non-natives. And I really hate to think that just because 1971 happened, and we've had many births in our families since then, that these people are totally, these children are not recognized as Native people. And I would hate to think too. In fact, I can just go back a little further. My father happened to be an Irishman. My mother was Tlingit. As we registered for the draft, for the armed service, I was registered as a white. I had no choice of that, because at one point the United States government said that whenever a Native person, a Native woman, is married to a white man, their children had become white. This was many years ago. I don't know what the law says now or anything, but 1971, I don't like to think that all these young children are not going to have a say in their Native heritage. The Native land claims made me no less a Native. It has not taken my tradition and my customs, my culture. It's still there. These corporations that we have, these 12 corporations, have not changed me. I'll be very frank with you, I do not trust the corporations. I do not like them. The only ones, as far as it is my belief, are those that are benefiting by these corporations, are those at the very top, the few choiced people. I have a lot of gripes. And I, too, am angry. I heard someone express it a little earlier today. If I may, I would just like to read something very quickly here. I picked it up from your office, Commissioner, and it's called The Alternative Approach to the Alaska Native Land and Government. This is, I really think it should be in on record, because I had no knowledge of this either. So perhaps if we just write it in here, or if I could read it real quickly, it might give somebody some insight to some of the things that are really, really pertinent to all this trouble that we have. I don't see myself, I'm confused. I don't know what I want to do. I don't want to sell my land, but I don't want it in the hands of a corporation either. This is the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, 1971. The terms of this act have been thoroughly covered in other papers presented to this commission and not repeated here. A few comments about the impact on the act on Native governments are nonetheless appropriate.
Who's it by?
This, I got it from your office.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Let me just see that.
Ralph Johnson. Yeah.
Good material?
Ralph Johnson is a professor of law at University of Washington College of Law, and he's one of the editors of Cohen's Handbook on Federal Indian Law, which is, I think, the leading book on the subject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just something that I thought about it all the time I was sitting here, and last night also. So I just wanted to let the other people hear it. It was initially assumed that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act extinguished every aspect of special Native American status in Alaska. While that assumption is probably accurate as to Aboriginal hunting, fishing, and land rights, it is not correct as to Native rights of self-government. Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act is explicit about the former, but silent about the latter. Under usual principles of statutory construction in the field of federal Indian law, termination of tribal self-government occurs only when congressional intent to accomplish such result is explicit, or at least clear and unambiguous. No such congressional intent is expressed in the Alaska Native Settlement Act. The Alaska Native Settlement Act nevertheless cast doubt on practical exercise of self-government, the unique feature of ANCSA, as compared to other Aboriginal settlements, is that it severed Native land ownership from Native government. The Act conveyed title to the land in fee simple to 12 regional and more than 200 village corporations chartered under the laws of Alaska. Neither the traditional nor the IRA Native governments received title to the land. A persuasive argument can be made that the traditional and IRA Native governments still exercise governmental power over this land base because they exercised it prior to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and the Act did not clearly destroy the power. No court has directly addressed the question. Novel issues are posed by the fact that the villages owning the land are chartered under state law, suggesting that some of the incidents of title may be controlled by state law. Nonetheless, the governmental control of the land may still retained in the traditional and IRA, I don't have the flu, but I can't talk today either, IRA village governments. I hope that does enlighten a few. There's so many good things in here that I haven't been able to go digest at all. We don't have enough information. And as Mr. Redd had spoken, it seems like the AFN is doing things backwards. How can they possibly be a voice for us when the shareholders have not even made any decisions themselves? It seems to me each corporation, and it's a big job to have the shareholders vote, and it is expensive. But how, at what expense? If we don't, the corporations and the AFN are going to speak for us. Whatever the cost, we have to do it. Whatever manner, I don't know. I just know I'm totally unhappy. Another thing, if I may, I think all the other corporations are similar to Sea Alaska. When the Board of Election time comes up, they run a slate. No one has been getting, I think probably the two directors now in Sea Alaska in probably 4 years. They just close ranks and they brainwash the shareholders, if that's such a name. I hate to think that Native people are doing that to each other. But the people on the corporate ladder are not to be trusted. Power and money, they've turned their back on you, the Native people. The only other thing I'd like to say is, again, and I can't stress this too strongly, that this Settlement Act did not make me any less Native. In fact, being away from Alaska for 25 years, and I became an urban citizen, 14 years in Manhattan. My friends, I have come back to Alaska 2 years ago. I am into my culture once again. I'm into my Native food, to my potlatches. I'm into my Native people. I like being back home. I don't particularly like Anchorage. I don't want to offend anybody, but I'm happy to be amongst my Indian people, my Native people, you know? So my decision is, as far as the land's concerned, I want to keep it. The other part, I want some help from my corporation if it's going to exist. Otherwise, it's totally useless. The only thing it has done for us Native people has caused ill feelings. Maybe I'd feel different if I were making $60,000 a year with Sea Alaska or $90,000. But I'm not. But I know one thing. I know that we have to unite. I thought the AFN was going to do it, but I don't know. Maybe we ought to go back to the basics and go back to ANS and ANB. We have to take a look at our true values once again. How do we do it? If you've got any ideas, you know, I'll be happy to work with anybody. But we have to unite, I know that. I don't have anything more to say, but I do thank you for hearing me again.
Thank you, Mr. Stokes. The commission, besides holding these hearings, is obtaining the views of experts as well, like Professor Johnson of Seattle, and we asked Professor Johnson to write up that paper that Gil was just reading, and there are quite a few papers like that that we have had prepared and for discussion, and they are public, you know. There was nothing surreptitious about the way he got that paper. We hand them out as long as we've got them.
Where do you hand them out from?
Our office at 429 D Street. That's a thick one, though. I don't think there are many left.
Also, I'm going to go on my third issue. And for the new ones coming in, I'm Mark Nielsen, Cook Inuit Native Corporation at large, from Sitka, Alaska, Tlingit Heritage. Got my education while I was traveling. Didn't go to school. Went to my grandfather's school. Went in the Army before I started my education. And I think I'm doing good. My aspects now is, what would happen to my grandchildren? Would they be still covered under the Land Settlement Act?
Well, if they were born after December 18th, 1971, they have no right to be enrolled as shareholders, but they may...
At large?
Well, not at large or any other way, but if you were in to leave a will, and when you die, saying that your shares should go to your grandchildren, well, then they'd get them. But they don't. They have to wait for somebody to die and leave them shares.
Leave them a will.
Yeah.
My daughter was born just under 1971 or older. Or, yeah, she was born in 1971. Yeah. She beat it just by 1 year. She's Sea Alaska. And I'm willing my gold bell to her in case if I should go. But then we can will our corporation to anybody we please as long as our Alaska Native Brotherhood or Alaska Heritage.
You can leave them to anybody you want, whether they're in Alaska or Finland or...
As long as I wish.
Yes, except the people that are not one quarter... Native. Alaska Native by blood, they would have the shares, but they couldn't vote them.
Yeah.
Now, as things stand after 1991, all of that will change, and and anybody that has those shares, Native or non-Native, could vote them.
Thanks. My other one is, what's his name? Leon spoke about subsistence. That's real great for our people. And if we should lose that, we won't exist to live. Without it, we're nothing. That's all we ever knew is subsistence. That's all we ever done. We never knew what work was. We didn't know what language was. That's all we worked on is subsistence. But I guess in time we'll get our answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nielsen. Did you want to add anything, Mr. Mink? You spoke earlier and said that...
Well, I can.
I wanted to ask you about... You proposed a referendum, and I just wondered what you had in mind.
Well, if you don't mind, then I will take a seat. And
sure, yeah, please.
I'm Leonard Minka from Chistochina, a Caribou Clan Athabascan Indian. My mother was out of Keokuk, first generation to come out of Keokuk and confront the Anglo world in Fairbanks and encountered a wheelbarrow full of hostility and racism and abuse. I still harbor some of this resentment, but it's been tempered with the years as I've been humbled trying to exist in this world, going through a couple of marriages and some hard economic times, and I think that probably my viewpoints now are somewhat more tempered and mature than they would have been had I given them 20 years ago. My eldest daughter is 20. I remember walking down the street in Fairbanks when I was a little boy, and two GIs driving by in his Ford. Hey, Kaluch. You want to jump in this car here and we'll bleep? And my mother clenching my hand and running off into the snow in the woods. And I said to myself then, I said, when I grow up, I'm going to be the toughest gosh bleep warrior that ever lived, and I'm going to protect her till my dying day. Well, as it happened, she started drinking quite a bit, and Time moved on, and she passed away. And when they autopsied her body, she was a presence of tuberculosis, and she was an alcoholic, and she'd been brutalized and beat to death. Well, when I found that SOB, you know, I worked him over real good, but didn't bring her back. And then my dad was supposed to, my stepdad, let's go to my dad, he was supposed to have died from tripping over a dog chain, but really a guy came over and kind of beat him up. And he was old, he was twice as old as my mother, old John Monahan. The Indians called him Manga. And he used to work with Andrew Isaac up at Chicken and Mount Hayes back in 1912, 13, and 14. Old John was a prospector and a guy come here from Tatura, New Zealand in 1904. Thought I was going to pick up a handfuls of nuggets and put them in his pockets and get back on the clipper ship and go home. And he spent a lifetime here and married my mother in the 50s. His relatives still write me from New Zealand. They're a fine Catholic family, and they went over to New Zealand from Monahan County, Mayo County, or the Monahans, and went to New Zealand. And I still receive letters from them, so I've been in contact with people from another part of the globe. My family has for many, many years now. And old John Monahan took care of my mother, even though he was twice as old as she was. He loved her. He didn't care what the color of her skin or the shape of her eye was. He loved that person. And it just really makes me feel good to have had contact with a man which taught me such good English. You know, the Irish and the people in New Zealand speak impeccable English, and apparently I have this accent from the legacy of John. And I guess they want me and Walter John, his real grandson, the son of Elizabeth John from Huslia, to go back to New Zealand. Well, this Catholic upbringing I got and all this suffering as a child because of the alcoholism and having to go through, I was in the children's home